Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Port Hope residents experienced a heck of a year in 2024. The Walton Street reconstruction, the fight over the South Bridge proposal for 65 Ward Street, then there was the demolition of the file factory and the setting of the 2025 budget, and the list goes on. In this interview, you will hear the mayor and deputy mayor reflect on the past year, but also look ahead to 2025. This includes what the municipality hopes to contribute to an action plan to American tariffs. Compare their assessment to yours. I am absolutely delighted to have with me today Port Hope Mayor Olena Hankvinsky and Deputy Mayor Vicky Mink. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you.
I want to start off by talking about Wesleyville. Olena, how is the announcement about building a nuclear plant in Wesleyville significant?
Well, Robert, I think that the announcement is definitely once-in-a-generation announcement. We were approached by the province to ask whether or not we would be interested in entering into a conversation and a community engagement around a new energy project at Wesleyville. And certainly it's very early stages in the process. We are just starting that community engagement process, but we're very fortunate that we have received $1 million in funding from the province to help support that work and to help support some of the things we're going to need to do to become ready and growth ready in particular. But with the election happening at the moment, things are at a bit of a pause, and we're expecting more updates on the discussions and the community engagement beginning next month.
Vicky, in the context of the years Port Hope has dealt with nuclear waste and the resources, time, money to clean it up, why so quick to endorse?
Well, I think it's a different conversation, really. I think the past and the cleanup is from lessons learned, and we're moving forward now with cleaning up mostly the urban community and what happened there historically. And I think this is a brand new conversation, and we're moving forward with what we know today and how we can move into the future.
Olena, no doubt there must be some fatigue within the community around the issue of nuclear waste. What can be done to mitigate that, especially going forward with the excitement and the energy that's, pardon the pun, the energy that's surrounding this new project?
Well, I think as Councillor Mink has pointed out, it's like comparing apples and oranges, what's happened in the past to what we're potentially thinking about now into the future. And I think a really critical part of this entire process, and it is a long-term project, is actually having those community discussions, engagement, education, awareness raising, so that everybody has a chance to learn more, to be part of those kinds of conversations. And the other part of it, which is undeniable, is in a community that has sorely lacked industry and business to offset residential taxes, that we do have to see this as I mentioned, a once in a generation opportunity to think about how we can augment our tax base, our revenue from industry, how that might then trickle down to lower taxes for our residents, and how that will create new jobs and new opportunities for the community.
Vicky, what is the reaction so far from the community? Has there been much opposition? Is there a lot of support? How would you characterize it?
From what I've heard, it's been fairly quiet, to be honest. There was an initial response. There was a lot of excitement over what opportunity it will bring. But then it's been, since then, I think there's a lot of people just sitting and waiting as to what is the next step and what exactly will it involve. I know that there is a number of people who are quiet right now. They're just waiting to see what opportunity will come as well as what risks will come. But we'll need to work through those in the years and decades really to come.
Lena, how is this going to lead to a greener future? Because I noticed in press releases and material that was sent out, there was references to a greener future.
Well, as we all know, the pressures on the electric grid in Ontario, as in many other provinces, is really stressed and at its limit. And if we intend to proceed with further electrification, then we're going to have to find different ways of creating energy sources. And, you know, I'm not here to say that nuclear is the only answer. There's many answers. I think we need to have a really holistic approach. But if not this, then what is what I would say. And I think the focus has to be on becoming educated, and as Councillor Mink said, to really fully understand what the opportunities are and also what the risks are and how we can mitigate those.
Before we go back and start talking about the past year and too far into the future, there's one more current thing I'd like to talk to both of you about, and that is the current situation with tariffs and the economic pressures and uncertainty that our country faces. Elena, tariffs are on everyone's mind. We've watched as the federal and provincial governments have navigated what is going on. The county has also released a notice about discussions taking place between municipal bureaucrats. But what, if anything, is Port Hope proposing to do locally in response to this current situation?
Well, Robert, I think that this is still very early stages to be able to answer that in a fulsome way. I think you're right. The most important thing that's happening is the communication that is occurring between the lower tiers in the county, thinking about how to best respond, how to protect the local economy, how to take stock of how much engagement we've got with U.S. firms and products. I can tell you that in the municipality of Port Hope, less than 5% of anything that's procured in our municipality comes from a U.S. source. So I think we have a real opportunity to pivot away from that. It's not significant, but the impact on the economy and on jobs is going to be real, and we're going to have a very fulsome plan to how to withstand that, how to be resilient, and how to deal with this new reality. And frankly, I think it's going to be a very unstable reality for the upcoming years. And so how can we be best prepared, I think, is part of an ongoing discussion.
Vicky, when you're out in the community, what are you hearing people say around this issue?
Around the tariffs? Well, I think this is just the uncertainty. I think a lot of people consider how it will impact them in their homes and their spending habits. I'm not so sure that there's been a lot, you know, I can't speak for people in general, but I'm not sure there's been a lot of thought about how it will impact the municipality and resourcing the municipality, and that will impact budgets and levies and so on. It's just people are sitting and again, waiting to see how this will impact them.
I'd like to turn our eyes back now on 2024 and things that have been going on within Port Hope. I want to talk about Southbridge. Where is the town with regards to 65 Ward Street? Elena, maybe you could bring us up to date.
We are still in a holding pattern. It's still caught up. We have a number of what I would call legacy files that are currently just held up in legal processes, and it's just a wait and see for us at the moment.
Vicky, with an eye to the associated costs with this, do we have any idea about how much this has cost the taxpayers so far?
I don't have that number at this time.
Would you happen to know?
Not yet, but at some point, as with all expenditures that we have on any file, that will be enumerated and made public.
The OLT has a reputation for siding with developers. Elena, what are the chances of the towns being successful? What would you say they are?
I'm not going to make any predictions, Robert. I think, you're right in saying that historically they have sided largely with developers, but I'm not going to make any predictions on this file.
Vicky, maybe you'd like to look into the tea leaves and tell us what you see.
Well, again, I would agree with the mayor. I can't make any predictions. It is a unique scenario, though. It's not a typical development, a residential development. There is a historical significance to the property and buildings. We're talking about long-term care. So there's a lot of complexities to this particular file.
I'd like to now turn to the budget deliberations for 2025. Council approved a $56 million budget for 2025. Nearly $30 million of that was raised through local taxes. Just a really simple question to start with. What percentage increase was that?
Well, Robert, I would say that our council had made a decision not to talk about percentages, but rather to talk about what it meant for the average taxpayer, because we found over the years that there's much confusion in the public when we start talking about percentages, because the tax bill comes from both the county, the municipality, and the educational sector. And so we were caught up in many instances in ensuring a percentage and then having that challenged once the county portion of the tax levy came in and the educational sector was added. But I would say in general, and again, this is just from my perspective, we are really stretched as a municipality for all the reasons we talked about earlier, is not having a strong industry and business tax base to draw on. We're having increasing burden onto the residential taxpayer, not only because we don't have those additional sources of revenue, but because the fiscal framework between the federal government, the province, and the municipalities are really broken. It's not sustainable. We can't continue to do all the work that we need to do, especially in terms of replacing our failing assets and entering into areas that we never imagined to be in, whether it's social services or health or even education, without getting additional supports to do that work. And so we understand that it is a tremendous pressure for all of our constituents, and we continue to advocate for change.
Vicky, the final phase of Walton Street reconstruction takes place this year, and it's in the budget. But the work done in 2024 was a major disruption in the downtown. Businesses were very concerned, and now that we're a few months after the reopening, what is the business community telling you now?
Well, I think it was a major disruption, but I think it couldn't have been handled better, to be honest. I think there was a lot of fear going in. Keep in mind that we were just coming out of COVID as well, so a lot of these shops were already struggling, and this was another challenge in front of them. From what I've heard, there was great relationships developed between the residents on the downtown street and the shopkeepers, as well as the crew that was working. And I think the municipality and the community did their best to support those shops and to continue to shop local. We came in on budget and on schedule. And I think overall, for such a difficult project with so many uncertainties, that it couldn't have gone better.
But do you have any idea of the size of the economic hit that the businesses took? Has there been any kind of a report, or have you gotten any anecdotal evidence to reflect how the economic impact was on the downtown?
I personally have not received those numbers specifically. I don't know if Elena has more.
Elena, do you happen to have more?
Yes, in fact, I can share with you just a couple of things. One is that there will be a report forthcoming that will provide some of those details that you're asking about. But interestingly enough, we had more businesses open than close during construction time in Port Hope. So I think that's definitely very positive. And I think it's also fair to say that the impact was really felt in an uneven way across different businesses. So some businesses actually reported an increase in business. Others were much harder hit. And I would say that those that were the hardest hit were the restaurant industry and some of the retail shops as well. But I wouldn't say that it is just like one story that was experienced by everyone. And I do think to Councillor Mink's point, that there was a sense that the businesses really came together downtown in a way that hasn't happened, and that sets a very strong precedent for more cooperation and collaboration moving into the future.
When do you anticipate this report will be made public?
I'm not certain yet. It's something that was just mentioned this morning at a chamber breakfast by some of our staff in economic development. So I would assume in the coming weeks or the near months.
In light of the hardships that some businesses have faced due to the reconstruction and other things that are going on within the local economy, are there any plans to provide further support to the downtown?
I would say, Robert, that the municipality really did make a very concerted effort to support the downtown merchants and businesses throughout this entire process, including, for example, doing all the local campaigns that we had in place, pairing up some of the businesses, allocating a portion of parking ticket revenues for the HBIA to support the businesses downtown. So there was sustained support throughout the process. And beyond that, there are no further plans.
Vicky, what are you hearing people say about that project, the downtown reconstruction? I mean, it is a couple of months after the fact, but do people still talk about it? And when they do, what are they saying?
Well, again, that's a little more difficult for me to answer because I do live rurally, so I'm not as connected to people who may use downtown on a regular basis. But from what I have heard, it's either positive or else they are ready to move on to the next phase. We've had it redone, the downtown, so we've got some new bump outs and Silva cells. So there's been a little bit of talk about that, and I think most people are waiting to see the summer season and how they'll go about as pedestrians in that space. So I'm looking forward to that.
The 2025 budget had a line item around economic development and putting an emphasis on attracting businesses. Now, this is something that is often put on the to-do list for a budget. Elena, what is the difference this time?
Well, that money is earmarked directly for the economic development plan and the implementation plan, and there are a number of different priorities that have been identified in that plan. So the staff is busy with all those different points of implementation. And as you can probably imagine, these sorts of plans take a lot of time and energy. And I know that there's a specific attention being paid to really supporting tourism and a tourism approach and strategy, creating a new film policy for the downtown area, and just really ensuring that what was planned is actually going to be successfully implemented.
Elena, the reopening of the walk-in clinic was an important step in expanding access to healthcare in Northumberland County. Now, this was a very important project you and Councillor Les Andrews shepherded over 2024. Any idea of how many people are using it currently?
Well, I can tell you that to date, 92% of everybody who's been seen at the walk-in clinic is local. That is from Northumberland County. We also know that there's a split between the people that are accessing the clinic. So we have 50% of rostered, 50% of unrostered patients, but we're trying to determine whether those patients that are rostered that are using the clinic are actually rostered with doctors within the county, or if they've got doctors further flung across the province, which makes it sort of impractical on a day-to-day basis to access primary care through those means. We do know that any time that the clinic is open, that within the first 5 minutes, all of the spots are taken up. And so we are moving forward in the coming weeks to secure the funding required for the clinic to remain open and to expand the days and hours of operations so we can go from strength to strength. I recently organized a professional development event for doctors at the clinic, and we've got another about 7 doctors who are interested in participating in the clinic. And we're also exploring the option of bringing in a nurse practitioner. But until, you know, we have more movement on doctor recruitment across the county, until we have some relief on the 9,000 unrostered patients, this clinic is providing a very important and necessary service.
Just as a follow-up, are you finding a lot of pressure to, you know, you're talking about expanding and enhancing the services. Is there a lot of pressure to follow through on this and to not leave it in the status quo as it has been?
I don't think one can talk about it in terms of pressure. This is a necessity. If we don't have a healthy community, we don't really have much else to build on. So I would say it's a priority. It's in some ways, one can say, a crisis. And so I think that the support around it and the enthusiasm around it in the community remains constant. Everybody has a story of knowing someone who doesn't have a doctor in the community or doesn't have a doctor in this community. And so I think it's something that's very near and dear to everybody's heart. So I don't see it as a pressure. I just see this as a really important priority.
Coburg seemed to have garnered most of the attention around the encampment in 310 Division Street in 2024, especially when it comes to assisting people living rough. What did Port Hope do in 2024 to address this issue?
Well, we, as you mentioned, we don't have as much presence as Port Hope. It's not at the forefront as far as encampments and so on. But we do have that. We do have people who are, I'll say, camping or living rough in the neighbor in our community. So in those cases, we have reached out. We've tried to partner them with services that they need. Most of it is in Coburg. That's where those services are provided. So we'll connect them as we're able to. But we've done other things. We have sort of taken a proactive. We started with the youth hub. It's not up and running quite yet, but we've made the first steps, which is trying to curb some of these problems before they become a problem and give that opportunity for the younger people in our community to have resources available to them. So I would say that was the biggest one. We also have a few counselors who are involved in a committee to help find housing solutions and curb those issues away from the community, but address those community issues.
Just as a follow-up then, is the town prepared to take on more responsibility to share the burden of providing services, as the mayor of Coburg has argued over the past year?
Well, I think right now we are going through our strategic planning process, sort of a phase two of that. And this is one of the pillars that we are addressing. So I think those conversations are happening right now. We're all having those conversations one-on-one with some people that are helping us with our strategic plan. And then we'll be coming together and addressing those as a council and as a community in the coming months.
Elena, affordable housing is another critical issue in the community. Yet over the past year, the construction of homes has slowed. What is Port Hope doing to ensure affordable units are being constructed and this issue is being addressed?
I think that's a it's a great question. I mean, in addition to what Councillor Mink was saying about having these conversations and making sure it's part of our blueprint in our strategic plan moving forward, I do think we've made some very important strides. And the first is I think we've had conversations about what do we mean by affordable housing? Should we actually think about a different way of describing this and saying housing that is affordable to all in our community? Because I think affordable housing has a certain stigma attached to it. People tend to then fall into discussions around social housing. But the reality is, if we think about what is affordable across Northumberland County and in Port Hope, we're looking at making, an average of a salary of $70,000 to be able to afford to rent a one-bedroom apartment and be food secure. So we can think about a whole host of folks that are living and working in our community for whom that is not a reality. So I think we need to use different language around it. In terms of what Port Hope has been doing, I think that one of the most significant achievements we had at the end of last year was our land inventory project, where we actually identified all the land that is owned by the municipality and identified which of those parcels of land might lend themselves to housing projects in the future. So we'll certainly be taking the next steps around some of the recommendations that were put forward in that land inventory project. I think we're going to have to be quite creative with how we can leverage municipally owned lands and partnerships with not-for-profits, with the county, with developers to try to bring in more affordable options and a wider variety of options. So, for example, Robert, we have not had one apartment built in the entire municipality since 2009. So we need to talk about not just the quantity of housing, but also we're going to really have to think about the variety of options that are going to be provided in the community.
Vicky, over the past year, there have been some staff turnover in Port Hope. Over the past year, it has experienced changes to key people, the CAO, environmental services, development services, and so forth. How has this impacted the business of the town?
Well, of course, it's unfortunate whenever we lose somebody, especially once they start building morale and with the council and the other staff. So most of these people have moved on to other opportunities, which is great for their career path. So we congratulate them on that. It does, I wouldn't say it sets us back. We have a very strong team. We have a very strong council, and we know what direction we're going. But it is always a change, a little bit of a change of a culture every time that someone leaves. But at the same time, it brings new opportunity as well. Different people come with other experiences and different strengths that can contemplate what the other has left behind. So we work through it. And I think it's just the nature of municipal the municipal world. There's always staff moving around, and the past couple of years we've experienced some of that, but we'll continue. We're resilient.
The file factory was the loss of a heritage building, and the town has said goodbye to a piece of its history. Did council, past or present, drop the ball on this portfolio to allow the owner to demolish this?
No, I don't think so. It's a very complex file. I think what people need to remember is that that was a private property. There's a lot of discussion about what is council going to do with that property. There's been a lot of discussion about what the GRCA is going to do with that property. But it is a private property, first and foremost. So we don't have that authority to go in and just do what we want. Unfortunately, we did have the collapse of the middle section. We, as a council, did try to put some heritage value on that to protect it. And then, of course, we had the fire that followed. So there was a series of unfortunate events that followed a long history of it just sitting there without any movement either. So it is quite unfortunate that we did lose that building, because it was a very important industrial architectural piece that didn't see its full life, I would think.
Elena, council took a pass on the request from Coburg to look at changes to local policing. But the idea of sharing services and an amalgamation is sitting in the background. Coburg Council is pushing to get a restructuring study underway at the county level. Based on the reaction by Port Hope Council to the policing request, do you feel there is an appetite for these kinds of talks right now?
Absolutely, Robert. And I don't think that, you know, we should look at the conversations we had as police as an indication of the appetite to look where there's service duplication, where we can be tightening up of our resources, where we can be looking at positions that can be shared and where cost savings can be realized. After all, we're talking about one taxpayer in two different levels of government. And so I'm actually very excited about the fact that our council has supported looking at some restructuring, looking at where services can be made more effective and more efficient, because I do think there's lots of areas for improvement. And I do think that whether we're talking about the lower tier municipalities or certainly conversations that happen at the county level, that everybody is keenly aware that the cost of living is very difficult in our community, and that we need to do all that's in our power to ensure that we're finding the savings wherever possible.
Vicky, there were steps council took to look at municipal conduct rules, and there was concerns over the past year raised by the public about access to council from citizens. Is the current system working? Why or why not?
It's an interesting question. Yes. So we did have a procedural bylaw review, and we made some changes to the structure of our schedule, as well as how Committee of the Whole and council meetings would play out, to make sure that they are a good use of time. We made a decision, we gave it a try, and it didn't seem to work out for the community. So we went for trial number two. At this point, I think we have more opportunity for contact with your council representatives than ever before, and done in different ways. We now have question period, we have delegations, deputations, we also have a comment period. And not to forget that you always have the ability to contact your counselors as well, whether that's by email or by phone. So I think there was a little bit of a stir for a while. We heard and we made those changes.
I'm going to ask you both this question. So I'll start with Vicky and then I'll ask Elena the same thing. There was so much going on over the past year and lots of plans for 2025. If there was one thing, and I'm going to hold you to one thing only, what should everyone be keeping an eye on in the upcoming months, Vicky?
So, are you saying in general?
What should people be watching for?
I would be watching for, I would say our strategic plan. I think that is key. We're having new discussions about our strategic plan, and how I view a strategic plan, it's not just a pretty document that goes on paper. It should correspond with our operational plan. It should correspond with our budget. And I think it should go a step further, and community groups, such as the library, for instance, should have an alignment between their strategic plan and the municipal strategic plan. So we're working together inclusively as one community towards one common goal. And everyone can have a say in that, whether you're part of a group or whether you're an individual, whether you're living rurally or urban or an apartment or a house or however, you have a say. And those conversations are happening now. And if you want to have that say, then participate.
Elena, how about you? One thing.
Well, I'm going to have to copy Councillor Mink on this, because I do think that our strategic plan is really essential, but I'll add a little nuance to what Councillor Mink has said, and that is that I think people should watch to see how that strategic plan is going to be shaped by the Wesleyville opportunity. And, you know, to what extent is that, is it going to be at the forefront? To what extent is it going to shape some of our priorities and thinking towards the future? Because I do think that's the one thing that's changed. And that's the one thing that I don't think we contemplated when we started the strategic planning process a couple of years ago. And I think it will make a marked difference in some of the conversations that are had moving forward, both from an economic development perspective, but also in terms of a social infrastructure perspective, what we want to see as a community for our future and for our growth.
Lena Hankminski, Vicky Mink, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
That was Port Hope Mayor Elena Hankovinsky and Deputy Mayor Vicky Mink. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.